Back at it again, you and I chatting it up midweek Wednesday style, May the 6th, 2026, right here on Connecticut Today. I started the show looking at a report from Hearst that more retailers in the state are using automated license plate scanner technology in their parking lots, raising some civil liberties questions. Quinnipiac University Assistant Professor of Criminal Justice Kimberly Preslowski dropped by to comment on that report. Meantime, Hearst Connecticut Media's Dan Haar capped out the day talking about the waning days and hours of the current General Assembly session. There's a lot to talk about today. Yes, the General Assembly is winding down. We'll talk about the Glock switch bill, whether or not the Golden Girls bill for renting out bedrooms is going to move along. All this stuff and more. Dan Haar is coming up. But I wanted to start with this because this is a fascinating story. And this is what I made our question of the day here. Now, you know how I feel about speed cameras, red light cameras, license plate readers. I couldn't care less if you paid me. If you said, here's $1,000, you need to care less on this, and I'll write you the check or give you a wad of cash for $1,000, I couldn't do it. I couldn't take your money because I couldn't care less. I'm not one of these, oh, here comes the big brother cabal. I'm not one of those. I know I'm not a criminal. I'm not driving a stolen car. I'm not running around with Akumad on the side and some angry husband's going to come after me. I don't have any warrants. I'm not an illegal. I'm just your average, boring, pudgy, suburban white guy. But I find this interesting. Ella Napack, I believe that's how you pronounce her last name, N-A-P-A-C-K. Cameras are scanning license plates at, according to Hearst, some Home Depot stores and Lowe's. All right. Well, maybe they're looking for illegals, Paul. I don't know. I don't care what they're looking for. But do you? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. The license plate cameras have been installed, Hearst reports here. It's a good piece of reporting here from Hearst. Have been installed in many of the parking lots of at least two retailers around the state, Lowe's and Home Depot. The automated systems take photos of, now here it is, the back of your vehicle, unless, of course, you're a drug dealer and have a tinted cover on the license plate and have blacked out windows and lowered rims and one of those obnoxious aftermarket manifold kits or muffler kits. They take photos of the back of your vehicle as you drive up to pick up your spring planter or new patio furniture at the big box home improvement stores, or you're an illegal working under the table for a landscaping company. I'm kidding, it's a joke. Well, maybe it's not. The company say the cameras primarily are used to prevent retail theft and increase public safety. Law enforcement can access data from Lowe's and Home Depot's license plate cameras in Connecticut, specifically cameras made by a company called Flock Safety. Oh boy, here comes the ACLU. Here comes the NAACP. Here comes every immigrant rights group. Automated license plate cameras installed along public roads on behalf of police departments have come under scrutiny in recent months. CT Insider has confirmed more than two dozen police departments using the license plate readers. There's no public database detailing which departments are using them and where they're located. Good. We don't need that. We don't need the public to know that because the criminals will then end up knowing that. And if you're not a criminal, you shouldn't worry. Home Depot told the Connecticut Insider in a statement that it does not share information directly with the feds. I wish they would. What the hell are you doing with it then? Well, you worried about somebody? You worried about somebody stealing a begonia? Home Depot said on its website, "We do not grant access to our license plate readers to federal law enforcement to federal law enforcement." The cameras are used for the purpose that says here, according to Sarah McDonald, the spokesperson for Home Depot. The Hearst people ran this story. The cameras are used for the purpose of detecting and preventing theft and protecting the safety of our customers and associates. The company, however, did not respond to a question about whether out-of-state agencies could access data from the cameras at Connecticut stores, similar to what's been done with data collected by local police departments in some cases. Connecticut Insider found out-of-state law enforcement agencies were accessing a national network and appeared to be conducting searches on behalf of federal agencies. Good, good. I'm going to do that more. Find the bad people. Lowe's website says, quote, "We only disclose your personal information if required by law or legal processes, or when we think doing so will help protect the safety, property rights of individuals or Lowe's." Flock has confirmed to Connecticut Insider that federal agencies do not have direct access to license plate data collected by their systems. The company faced scrutiny last summer. That was after it was reported Flock gave the feds, like Homeland Security and Customs and Border Patrol, access to Illinois as part of a pilot program to combat human trafficking and fentanyl distribution. The company ended that pilot program and placed other limits on federal agencies' requests of local data. So here's what I don't get. You can drive around in public with no expectation of privacy, your license plate on that car, on whatever vehicle you're driving, is supposed to be and is a public declaration of where this vehicle is, where it's from, who it's registered to, who the owner might be. That's the reason for a license plate. In other words, you have been granted a license by a specific state to operate a motor vehicle. It is not supposed to be covered. That's why you're never going to tell me that most of those people who have covers on their license plates are, I don't want to say crooks, but maybe there's a side to them we don't know. I don't know. Or they want to steal money by not paying their fair share in tolls. So listen, this is, and listen, I have nothing against Hearst for publishing this. This is good. Kudos to Home Depot and Lowe's. But does this bother you? You could take a photo of my license plate 1,000 times a day. I couldn't care less. Honestly, I don't care. You couldn't force me to have less of a worry about this. Well, Paul, you know, it's Big Brother. Big Brother is not concerned with me. I pay my taxes. I don't have any pending warrants. I'm not a human trafficker. I'm not an illegal. I'm not improperly hiring illegals off the books to cut somebody's hedges in Wilton, Westport, or New Canaan. I'm not doing that. I'm boring old me. They want to follow me. Oh, look, he's going down Elm Street in Wallingford. Whew. Oh, look at that. Oh, boy. Wait a minute. He's pulling into, what is that? What is that? Is that a brothel? No, it's a Chinese restaurant. I mean, come on. Seriously. But I wanted to start with, oh, believe me, we have a packed show. A lot more stuff coming up here. But I want to start with this. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. Hearst Media reports that license plate cameras are being used at Connecticut Lowe's and Home Depot stores. Does that bother you? Undoubtedly, it will bother some people because they'll say, it's Homeland Security, it's ICE, it's Border Patrol. All right, maybe they're looking for people that should not legally be here. I don't know. But are we going to hear from the usual suspects who are going to scream about civil liberties when you have no reasonable expectation of privacy when you're outside your home property? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. If you're in a Lowe's or you're in a Home Depot and you're minding your business, do you really care about these license plate readers? I don't. I honestly don't. Well, that's not the principle of it, but well, it isn't? You tell me. A lot of people chiming in too already on this question of the day. Facebook.com/voiceofct. Listen, good reporting here by Hearst. I'll give him that. But it brings up an interesting question. Why are people so afraid to admit that they have no privacy when they're outside. That's why I think all window tinting should be illegal, too. I'm serious. All of it. All of it. Unless you have a medical reason, you have skin cancer or you have something where a doctor says, nah, I get you gotta cut down on the UV stuff here. But you know what? License plate covers should be illegal. Bring on the license plate readers. We'll solve umpteen more crimes and get rid of that window tint. I'm serious. I mean, the only reason you're tinting a window is because you don't want somebody to see you. Why don't you want to be seen when you're driving on a public thoroughfare? Do I not have a right to see if you're pointing a weapon at me? Privacy and driving, whether it's tinted windows, whether it's license plate cameras now in a couple of big retailers. By the way, geez, I wonder why the feds are interested in license plate readers at Lowe's and Home Depot. Why might that be? Little off the book labor there? What do you think? All right, we start with that coming up right here, right now on WICC. Is this too much of the Big Brother society? People have been saying that for years, back decades ago, 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s. This new telephone thing, they'll know, you know, party line. They can listen to where, you know, who we're talking to. Look, you can't have complete privacy in this world. You can't. But a very, very interesting story here in Hearst, Connecticut media. I would recommend you give it a gander. Hearst is reporting here. They did some digging, and they found out that cameras are scanning license plates at some Connecticut locations of Lowe's and Home Depot. Now, scanning. Now, you could. The part of this that may upset you is, I will admit that just regular video recording is different than license plate scanning. But think about how many places we go into on a regular basis that have a sign there that says, for example, we'd just like you to know you're being recorded for your convenience and safety. Heck, the Stop and Shop I go to in Wallingford, they've got a couple of movable video recording. What's the word I should look for? Movable video recording masts or apparatuses or apparati. They move around the parking lot there, and they put them in a few years ago. I guess there were some muggings or carjackings or whatever. And it says, and there's an announcement there. On a repetitious loop, thanks for coming to Stop and Shop or something like that. You're being video recorded for your safety or whatever. So I guess that's what all people have to do. But as far as I know, there is nothing given as far as license plate reading there. But does that bother you at all? And of course now, with immigration the way it is and with a hot button issue the way it is, a lot of people are saying, well, the feds are just looking for illegals. All right, maybe they are. Maybe they are. But, and again, people who would argue that are not arguing the real issue that starts all this. And that is that, you know, whether you think they're coming here for a better life, you support them, they come from crap hole countries, or at least countries that have good people, that have corrupt governments, it still does not actually bullseye and identify the real problem here. And you see, Chris will be reading some of the answers to our question later on, but yeah, there is a lot of people saying, well, this is overreach. Why is it overreach? Was video overreach? Is the use of facial recognition software overreach? If you're walking in major American or European cities like New York, Barcelona, Rome, London, is that overreach? In fact, you know, London is the most surveilled city in the world. I don't know if they still are. But I read something a few years ago where every square foot of every street in most areas of London is covered by a video camera. Now, all right, does that bother you? It doesn't bother me. Well, don't you care that people know what you're doing? Well, no, not really. And I'm not trying to, listen, I'm not trying to stir the pot here. I'm not trying to be cavalier. I just don't care. Am I dumb for not caring? You can tell me. You tell me, I'll tell you. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. And does that change your mode of thinking now? See what I mean? Is there a different mode now of your thinking with us discussing this and you and I chatting about this in this Hearst story that's headlined, Cameras Are Scanning License Plates at some, not all, at some Lowe's and Home Depot stores in Connecticut? What's more important, your civil liberties of not wanting to be scanned, or maybe the safety of somebody that may be being held against their will or looking for a dangerous criminal? Where do we draw that line between your desire, even though you're a largely, I'm going to assume, a law-abiding person, saying, hey, I don't want you to keep following me around here with these scanners, or society's greater right not to be moving among the ne'er-do-wells? You tell me. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. And we're going to wrap up on this, getting an expert opinion on this story in Hearst, saying, hey, there are some private businesses, more and more of them, using these license plate readers, and apparently there are some local Home Depot and Lowe's locations doing this. So joining us to chat about this, Quinnipiac University Assistant Professor of Criminal Justice, Kimberly Preslowski, is with us. Professor, good to have you back here on the show. How are you?
Good. How are you, Paul?
I'm very good. Very well, Professor. Thank you. Well, when you heard this, when you read this story, any of this surprise you, Professor, or is this kind of a growing trend maybe or not? You tell me.
It doesn't necessarily surprise me. If anything, I think Connecticut is late to join in on this national trend, and we're seeing more of this happen in other states, this kind of blending of private sector cameras into public sector networks. And so I know there's a lot of individuals concerned about this, and rightfully so.
Yeah, so let's talk a little about that. From your background, from a policing and law enforcement background and trying to use the best technology here, Professor, does this work? I mean, do they find people who steal stuff, human traffickers, things like that, kidnapping people with warrants? Do these things work?
Yeah, so there is empirical evidence to support that license plate readers do work when it comes to police investigation. So they're really helpful in recovering stolen vehicles, locating missing persons, investigating more violent crime, and also connecting crimes that are happening across jurisdictions, and that's just to name a few. They've definitely made the investigative process a lot more efficient, and so cases are being cleared quicker. But license plate readers are not traditionally used as the sole as evidence in an incident or a case. Rather, they work hand in hand to help corroborate with other pieces of evidence to kind of paint a whole picture.
Is this, Professor, what officials sometimes refer to as a force multiplier? Hey, we don't have to have uniformed officers going up and down parking lot aisles and doing this manually. Is that how they look at it, as a tool to enhance the force?
Absolutely. So it's often referenced as a force multiplier. And, that has really stemmed from that sort of less boots on the ground has stemmed, I think, from sort of the public scrutiny around police practices in 2020 and beyond. And so I think that in some jurisdictions, it's a great tool to not have police presence, but rather, technology in place. But in other jurisdictions, again, there's questions around it.
You know, Professor, I've talked about this before, and obviously anything you and I can read has always mentioned, I don't want to say a misconception, but maybe a misunderstanding people have, that when you are out in public, correct, when you're on a public thoroughfare driving a vehicle which is publicly registered, legally, we hope, There is quite less, correct me if I'm wrong here, Professor, but I guess there's quite less of an expectation of privacy, correct?
Much less of an expectation of privacy. I also think that the public doesn't always have an understanding of how these technologies are used.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not on the public. I would say that's more on law enforcement and the state to
yeah.
sort of bring things to light. And, you know, data is collected as a vehicle passes by an LPR, that information is going to be collected. And sometimes it's more than just a license plate, but usually, or as it should be, that information shouldn't be queried unless there is a vehicle involved in an investigation. And so mm-hmm. That's where we have to start thinking about what are the proper retention policies. The state of Connecticut moved to 30 days, and then there's warrants if you need to query something after it's been captured for more than 7 days. There's other states like New Hampshire that if you don't use a particular image of a license plate or vehicle within minutes, it gets scrapped or it gets purged. And so different states operate differently, but I think that that's sort of one concern that the public has. But yes, if you're in the public, you know, that information's unfortunately being captured.
Yeah. And finally, Professor, that's an interesting point that you made there about the different jurisdictions and doing it. I mean, listen, you've been involved in police work, and, you know, I certainly have not. But in my business, I read about stories and we talk about stories where, you know, some image may have been captured and it takes 2, 3, 4 months sometimes forensically to connect that. In that case, in the case of these different levels of destruction or elimination of these plate reading images, is that a problem? Do we need maybe some sort of a national standard here, if for nothing else, Professor, to make it easier on law enforcement and to know that if they're doing a cold case or something that happened months or years ago, that they may have a help here with these images?
Right. So that's been at the forefront of discussion because, you know, when it comes to cold cases, that information is sort of like timeless. You need that information to,
yeah,
to put the puzzle together. And so there's no say to how quickly an investigation will be resolved. And so any information is better than no information. But, you know, when you talk about a national standard, that's really difficult to achieve because we are so decentralized as a police force in the United States. It's, you know, it's the ultimate goal, but it's going to take a long time if we do ever get there.
Quinnipiac University Assistant Professor of Criminal Justice, Kimberly Preslowski. Professor, thank you. Good to have you on again. And we'll chat down the road, I'm sure. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. So there you go. Our weekly check-in every midweek Wednesday right around this time. Quarter past. Give a minute or two. Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media. Mr. Haar, good afternoon, sir, and how are you? Is Dan there? Chris, is Dan...
Yeah, sorry. I was sorry. Oh. Sorry. I was on mute.
That's okay.
Because I was screaming about monopoles coming into my neighborhood.
Well, at least, but feel free, Dan, to scream and vent. That's fine. Let's start with that. And I know you have a great column today about Steve Harding and tax relief and all that. But yeah, I wanted to chat on you with it. But this is a calliope of weird. This whole monopole thing, isn't it, Dan? What are your thoughts on this?
Well, the first thing I want to say about it is that another word for monopole is pole.
Yeah.
So I'm in the newsroom telling people, can we please just call these poles? Because if it's a bipole, there's two of them. But if it's a monopole, it's just a pole.
It's a pole, so, yeah.
But what you have here is a classic example of a historic neighborhood that doesn't want these giant poles in their midst.
Mm-hmm.
But this is precisely the sort of thing that the Connecticut Siting Council would normally approve and has approved in many other places and would have approved here, bluntly, in my opinion, if the governor hadn't intervened. And the governor did intervene. I was at the Capitol when he had an unrelated press conference, and there was a din outside, as they said on the Marx Brothers, there's a din outside. and out he went to actually say, we're going to stop this thing. And he has done good to his word. He asked the Siting Council to stop it. Extremely rare for the governor to step in. And there are some political connections that may have led to that. The point being...
Yeah.
You know, listen, UI might have a case here if they can show that this is the kind of thing that the Siting Council would otherwise have approved.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, Dan. I mean, do we know whether there was any precedent for this? Like, isn't, is a, is, I mean, Isn't the Siting Council, you tell me, you know more about this than I do, are they supposed to act independently of the executive branch or not?
No, they are independent, but they do reject things. They don't reject very many solar projects, and I just had a story about that.
Yeah.
And my colleague Austin Romina has documented the amount of solar projects that they have not rejected. Mm-hmm. But the point is that, yes, they can and do reject. The issue with precedent in respect to the Siting Council is that each circumstance is unique. So you're not going to find another circumstance that's comparable. You know, where else in a town of 60,000 have they run poles for as part of a 7.3-mile, $300 million project through the old historic district of town? The answer is nowhere. It's unique. And so it's very hard to make comparisons. And if they say they rejected for reasons of aesthetics or whatever, then you have to stick by it. I think, you know, and then, of course, the alternative is to run them underground, which adds $500 million to a $300 million project. And even by Trump's math, that's, you know, that's 160%. So there you go.
Yeah. The General Assembly is going to wrap up tonight, supposedly around midnight. They did an all-nighter last night, which drives me nuts. I don't think it's a good look. But having said that, you have an interesting piece today about what the Senate GOP leader did once that lunacy cleared up.
Yeah, he drove home. He lives in Brookfield, which is an hour from from the capital in Hartford.
Yeah.
And he drove home, and he's a 38-year-old, good-shaped, six-mile-a-day runner.
Yeah.
And he had two options. Should I sleep 2 hours, or should I run 6 miles? and what do you think he did?
I'm guessing he ran.
He ran. He ran 6 miles. And, of course, I said, because you're in Brookfield, that must mean you ran a lot of hills.
Yeah.
But, no, he went to the gym. Which I don't mean to plug, and I hope it's not a competitor of one of your advertisers, but it was appropriately named Club 24.
Oh, I know those places. Yeah.
So he ran, and of course the underlying serious part of the issue is why the heck is the Senate in a position where they have to do an all-nighter the night before the last day, and both sides blame the other. The Republicans blame the Democrats for poor time management, and the Democrats blame the Republicans for unnecessarily filibustering. And to the Democrats' point, there was a six-hour debate yesterday on the transportation omnibus bill.
Sure.
Which, you know, okay. You know, that's a long one. But on the other hand, they have a right to object, and they're only 11 out of 36. So, you know, that's democracy.
And maybe, Dan Hara, you know, maybe, and I know this has been alluded to by the Democrats as kind of a shot across the bow, a warning here, maybe, you know, Connecticut in these cases should not have the unlimited, we're one of the few states that's got, an unlimited, untimed right of debate here? Maybe it should be 2 hours total time or an hour and 45, something like that. I mean, I don't know. I'm no parliamentary rules guy, but you know, you're right. This is just, it's just, Dan, you know what? It's just, I understand it happens a lot. It's just not a good look. I don't know about you.
Generally, Connecticut has more permissive policies about participation at the Capitol. For example, when there was a discussion of locking people out of the public hearings that were limited to 12 hours, I got a whole document from the Senate Democrats that showed that no other state among civilized states there was a comparison of eight other states, and they were all relatively civilized.
Yeah.
And that no other state had anything even remotely. New York, you have to sign up, and if you miss the sign, you know, it's much, much harder to testify in any other state and much more restricted. And I believe it's the same thing with debate on the floor. I don't cover every state, but I find it hard to believe that there are very many states that have a tradition of unlimited debate. And that, is what we do. And so, listen, democracy is a beautiful thing. It's ugly, but it's beautiful.
A couple more things. You wrote a piece, I understand, on taxes. I read that, property taxes. But you said there's some twists and turns in this whole thing, too, of people expecting some real property tax relief here.
Well, this is a sort of, we thought it was a technical glitch. When they passed the bill in the budget, as part of the budget, towns, schools get an extra $173 million.
Yeah.
Right? And so it turns out that managing the flow of that $173 million at the precise time when towns are setting their budgets is a mess. the Senate Democrats believe that all of that money has to go to schools, which would make sense, except what do you do if you're a town that just increased its school spending by 4% or $2 million, and you've just gotten $1 million? You don't now need that $1 million because you've locked in by statute, by ordinance, you've locked in your budget, and now you want to use that $1 million to offset taxes to save the average homeowner $200 a year. You can't do it. Under the Senate's interpretation, you can't do it.
Yeah.
Under everyone else's interpretation, you can. And this is the kind of thing that happens when you do everything at the last minute.
Exactly.
Because the language is the language. And what happened was this was a grassroots problem.
Yeah.
Lawyers from town started calling in saying, what am I supposed to do? This wording doesn't work.
Yeah. And finally, anything you've had your ear to the ground there, I would think, anything about this wonderfully fascinating First District congressional race? You live in the district there in beautiful, sunny, bucolic West Hartford. Some friends of mine are up there, too. Mr. Bronin and Congressman Larson and two other candidates there. Anything new we need to know about there, or is it radio silence?
No, I just wish I were a registered Democrat so that I could get all these advertisements that Luke Bronin says are being illegally paid for by the federal taxpayers because they are actually campaign ads instead of being free information going out. But I think the sniping is going to continue very intensely for the next week. Monday, March 11th is the convention, and both candidates are going to get their 15%. But the sniping is going to become much more public.
Yes.
And probably less nasty, because now after the convention, after they secure their ballot positions, probably they're going to now start to appeal to the voters versus the delegates. And when you're appealing to delegates, you can be a little bit more nasty.
Absolutely. Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media. Dan, as always, thank you. We appreciate the time. Have a good weekend, and we'll talk to you next Wednesday. Thank you, sir.
Quiet week.
All right. Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it. Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media.